So I wanted to discuss tonight Rav Chaim Eizer Grzensky and a tshuva that he penned, a very significant tshuva that he wrote. So first we'll discuss a little bit about his personality, who he was. Rav Chaim Eizer, it's hard to sum up, it's hard to capture him in a short amount of time, but we'll do our best. He was born in 1863 and lived for about 70 years, I would say, in a small town in Belarus. And near Vilna, small town near Vilna, where his father was the Rav for 40 years, and where his grandfather was the Rav. And from the young age, he was already known to be a tremendous child prodigy. Again, we don't say this about all Gedolei Yisrael, but he certainly was a testimony about this young little kid were tremendous. He himself is reported to have said in a few different accounts that he didn't understand the phenomenon of forgetting until he was much, much older. He has simply an infallible memory, unbelievable memory. He remembered whatever he read. There's tremendous stories about him. He had the unique capacity to be able to write two different letters at the same time with both hands. He was able to bifurcate his mind, and just a tremendous, tremendous genius, which we will see. He didn't only use for the academic pursuits, for the Torah Shabbat, but he used as he got older and became more of a leader in Klal Yisrael, he used this memory to a tremendous degree, which we'll see in a few minutes. So Rav Chaim Eizer, when he was a young boy, so he was learning already with his father, and then by the time he was 11 or 12, he decided to send him away to a kollel of Prushim, a kollel, all married people except for him. He was so beyond his level, so he sent him away to a kollel Prushim, a very prestigious kollel, until the age of 15. At the age of 15, he decided to go to Volozhin. Again, 15 was very young to go to Volozhin, but he was accepted right away to go to Volozhin and to go into the shiur of Chaim Brisker, where he developed a very strong relationship with Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Zevin, who has a nice article, short little biography of Rav Chaim Eizer in his Sefer Ishim Vishitas, where he tries to capture the personality and the different perspectives, halachic perspectives, and the writings of different individuals. So he writes that already Rav Chaim Eizer reached the status of not only a Talmud of Rav Chaim, but was a Talmud Chavar of Rav Chaim. He reached a unique status where he was almost on par with Rav Chaim Brisker. So he was in Volozhin at the age of 15. At the age of 20, he was traveling back home. On the way home, he traveled through Vilna. His town, his hometown was near Vilna. And his name was already Holech Shmo B'Yisrael, as a tremendous prodigy. So the Rav in Vilna at the time offered for him to say a drasha. So he darshaned, he got up and said a drasha at the age of 20, a single man at the age of 20, said a drasha to the entire Vilna, was the Ir V'Ein B'Yisrael, the Yushalayim, what the Svarim called the Yushalayim Delita, the Yushalayim of Lithuania. He said a drasha in front of the whole thing. And right away, one of the Dayanim, the Avbezin of Vilna, says, okay, I found a shidduch for my daughter. Problem was, he wasn't the only one that wanted a shidduch for his daughter. There was someone else there, another Chashev Talmud Chacham. It's unclear from different accounts of the story who it was, who also wanted him as a shidduch for his daughter. And they went, as the story goes, they went to Reb Yitzchok Elchanan, the Gadol Dor at the time, to argue out who gets, again, the system worked a little differently back then, I guess, to argue out who's going to get Reb Chaim Eizer as their son-in-law. And the story goes that Reb Yitzchok Elchanan met with him a little bit, got to know him a little bit, and told both of these people, both his future father-in-law and the other Talmud Chacham who's vying for him as a son-in-law, said that you're both lucky that I don't have a daughter, because if I had a daughter, I would take him as a son-in-law. So he decided eventually that the Avbezin Vilna, Rabbi Eliezer Eliyahu, who was a Talmud Muvhak of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and it was very prestigious, Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He was Avbezin Vilna at the time. Again, one of the most prestigious positions you get. He took him as a son-in-law. And he stayed in his father-in-law's house for the next 2 years, from 20 to 22. He sat and learned. His father-in-law supported him. At 22, his father-in-law died. And at that point, he was appointed as not Avbezin right away. He was still 22 years old. But he was appointed to Dayanas. Vilna at the time never had a rav. Since the time of the Vilna Gaon wasn't the Rav of Vilna, but since the time of the Vilna Gaon, I guess who was going to be the Rav of Vilna if the Vilna Gaon was there, and then they never had a Rav. It was the Minhag of Vilna, they never had a Rav, but they had Dayanim. So Chaim Eizer, at the age of 22, was appointed to be a Dayan on the Vilna Bezin, which was, again, unheard of, but his stature, his genius, again, was his name went before him, and he was accepted when people used to question his authority and say, you know, you're only 20 years old. Are you really ready to be a Dayan of Vilna? So he said, I promise you, this is something which I will improve with time. It'll get better. My age will improve. So as he got older, he established his authority within Klal Yisrael, really to an unprecedented, to something which we probably have not returned since Reb Chaim Ozer. His authority, the centrality of his authority, was something which we don't know today. It could be that in the Sephardi world, they replicated this to a certain degree with Rav Avadya Yosef. I don't know well enough, but for sure in the Ashkenazi world, we haven't had a central figure like Reb Chaim Ozer Gazensky since his demise. Again, he was a person who really ran the entire Lithuania. The Hasidish Rebbeim came to him, the Litvisha came to him. There could not be, when he was at his height, when he was really running the show, there was not a position filled in Lita, in Europe for that matter. There's not a position, whether it be a Sheikhet, whether it be a Shamash, whether it be a Rav, whether it be a Rosh Yeshiva, there was not a position filled until Reb Chaim Ozer gave it his okay. Just to give you a picture of how he was the last word. Reb Shimon Shkab was a Rav already in a town in Europe. Reb Chaim Ozer decided that he needs to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Grana. He left his position, he left his Rabbanis, he became the Rosh Yeshiva. He really was running the show. And they say that his memory is what really allowed him to do this. He would meet a person for a few minutes, a person who was traveling through Vilna. He would meet him, he'd get to know him, he would never forget him. Then a position would open up, he'd say, no, I met some person 5 years ago, I think it's good for that position. And he really used his, again, his unprecedented, unparalleled memory for to serve as the Rosh of all of Klal, Rosh Kol B'nei HaGoyel, the Rosh of all of Klal Yisrael. He got to a certain point where they offered him, obviously, tremendous jobs. They offered him to be the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. They offered him to be the chief rabbi of St. Petersburg, and he turned it down because he always said, I think I need, my people in Vilna need me. At which point the people in Vilna said, we'll offer you to be the chief rabbi of Vilna. Again, you can imagine what that was. There hasn't been a chief rabbi in Vilna since the time of before the Vilna Goyim. They offered him to be chief rabbi of Vilna, and he said, I can't do that. He said, Vilna doesn't have a chief rabbi, I'm not going to have a chief rabbi. So he said, fine, at least let us give you a raise. So he said, okay, you can give me a raise on condition that you give every other Rav in the area a raise as well. I'm not taking a raise unless every other Rav, which really segues into the next point. Although he was a tremendous genius, his brilliance, again, was certainly unprecedented for generations before him. He was the only thing that matched, as all the Sfarim write, anyone that knew him, the only thing that matched his brain was his heart. He had a heart of gold. He had people, the way he felt for people was tremendous. And we'll see, we'll read one of the tshuvas in Achiezer, tremendous brilliance, and you go through all of Achiezer, it's full of brilliance, but he writes, and this is something which he alludes to in his Hakdama, we'll see in a minute, but it's fleshed out in the biographies that people used to say, if Achiezer is a fairly small sefer, this is two of the volumes, and there's one other thin sefer. For someone of Reb Chaim Ozer's stature, you'd expect volumes and volumes. And he used to say, I gave up on writing Torah, I gave up on all that because my ticket into Olam Haba is going to be the Almanas, the Yesoimim, the orphans, the widows, the people that I take care of. His house was an open house. He never stopped anyone from coming. People would live there. He really had how he took care of Klal Yisrael. That's what he writes in his Hakdama. He says, you know, I've been hesitating to write till now, and the reason I've been hesitating to write now is because I've simply been too busy. I've been taking care of Klal Yisrael. The needs of Klal Yisrael are on my desk, and I have to do that. They say, this is a well-documented story, that he had one daughter, and that daughter was very sickly. She died at a very young age, at the age of 20 or 22. And when she was a gosessa, she was on her deathbed, he went right back to his office before she died. He said, there are few agunas that are waiting for heter aguna. A heter aguna could not go through in those days without Reb Chaim Ozer's signing onto it. And he said, I'm not going to be able to learn for a week now. These agunas are going to have to wait because my daughter's about to die and be sitting shiva. You're not allowed to learn. These agunas are going to have to wait a week. It can't be. So he went back to his office. He finished the Piskei Halacha before going back to his daughter. Ultimately, a few days later, she was nifteres. But just to show you the heart he had, really a heart, a father to all of Klal Yisrael.
Not a learn the whole Avelis, all 7 days.
All 7 days, you can't learn anything but Hilchas Avelis. They say when Reb Chaim Sefer came out, Reb Chaim Brisker Sefer came out, they say that Reb Chaim Ozer was crying. And he saw the Sefer, and again, he was very close to Reb Chaim Brisker. And he said, this is an unbelievable Sefer. He said, this is what I gave up. I could have done this. This is what I gave up for Klal Yisrael. And he was that was his, but the way his mindset was, and he writes it in his Hakdama. He says, I haven't published anything. Even though they're written down, they're almost ready to go. I'm taking for a pair of the cloth. He viewed his role. He has to be a father to Klal Yisrael. And he gave up. He gave up a tremendous amount. You can imagine a person with that, those intellectual capabilities. And he gave it up. And again, he was supposed to be a tremendous, really a father figure for people who did not have anyone. Zevin writes over here that he has testimony, Savlon Nifla, who's tremendously patient. There's no one like him. Those who knew him say he was never angry. He always had a smile upon him. Again, we often think about these geniuses as people who, the way they reached their stature in Klai, so it's because they had tremendous intellectual capabilities. And it's important to understand these are people that worked on themselves also, people that were tremendous tzaddikim as well. Aside from his impact on Klal Yisrael from what we would call political, again, he set up, just to understand his role in the way we know Klal Yisrael nowadays, it's tremendous what he did, what a single person did. Because he had such authority, again, unbelievable authority, which we don't know it today, and we could appreciate what it would be like if we had such authority today. He set up the Vad, the Agudas HaRabbanim was started by him. The Vad HaYeshivos was started by him. Originally, the Agudas Yisrael was started by him. Every organization that was known to Klal Yisrael was really began in his time. He centralized all of authority, and he really, everyone listened to him. He told the person to be Rosh Yeshiva there, he's going to go to be Rosh Yeshiva there. He told Reb Shlomo Hyman, Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Das in America, to be part of the Moetzes Gedolei Torah, whether he likes it or not. Reb Chaim Leiter said it. That was the end of the... So he really had a tremendous impact. But he didn't only have a tremendous impact in terms of the structure of Klal Yisrael, he had a tremendous impact on our halacha as well, the way we live, which is what we want to discuss tonight. Because many of the... All the important shailas of the day, which again, where it was at the turn of the century, where a lot of the current shailas, a lot of the new inventions were coming up, he had his psakan, he had the final word on. So a lot of what we're soymech on nowadays comes from these tshuvas in Achiezer. And it was uniquely him, this is an important idea to appreciate. Reb Zevin elaborates this on tremendously, and I never appreciated this until I started looking into it, is that it could have, he was probably one of the only people that could have had such an impact. Why? Because at the same time that he was coming to power, so to speak, that he was rising, he was the Avezin in Vilna, so the yeshiva world was going through a tremendous transformation. Again, with Reb Chaim Brisker becoming Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin, the whole Derech HaLimud changed. The whole Derech HaLimud went through a mapecha, where the older Rabbanim were looking at the new Talmidim coming out of yeshiva. They were learning what we'd call, what is common in yeshivas nowadays, as the Brisker methodology. But they said, I don't know what you're doing. You're speaking Chinese to me. It's a whole new methodology. Reb Chaim Brisker changed the way they learn in yeshivas. So you had the older Rabbanim, who looking at the younger Rabbanim said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And the younger Rabbanim, looking at the older Rabbanim, said that you haven't been enlightened yet. So within the world of yeshiva, forget the Haskalah of the enlightenment, within the world of yeshiva, you have two generations who simply can't speak to each other. So what do you need? You need a bridge. Reb Chaim Eizer was able to be that bridge. The reason he was able to be that bridge is because he had the background from his father. His father was a Rav, he had the old style. He had learned in a kollel of Prushim who had the old style, and then he had been introduced to Reb Chaim Brisker. And one of the major tensions between the new style and the old style was, do you care about the here and now, the Rishonim, how to understand what's in front of me, or do you take into account all of Shas and all of the Rishonim? So he had the photographic memory, he had all of Bikiyas, he had all the Yediyas, together with his understanding with his closest relationship with Reb Chaim Brisker, he was able to synthesize both of them. And therefore, he was respected both by the young and by the old. So he really was a bridge, both in terms of, he was the leader in all elements. He was the leader both politically, in terms of the structure of Klal, and the leader in learning as well. That's why all the shailas ended up coming to him. So now a little bit about, we understand a little bit about Reb Chaim Eizer. So let's discuss what we're going to be discussing tonight. So again, just to give you an example of some of the big shailas which came to Reb Chaim Eizer, these are already modern shailas which came up only in the past few centuries, and he had to deal with them. Shailas such as gelatin, right? Big shaila that the Paiskim till Ari Yamazar are discussing. So he was the first meshiv on the shaila of gelatin. Perhaps one of the most important tshuvas that he wrote is the one we're going to read tonight. And I think it's important to read not only because of the halacha shabo, which is really set precedent for the way we live now, but also you get a little bit flavor of who he was as a posek, is the electricity. Again, remember, electricity was a new thing back then. It was just becoming popular, right? One of the things I learned in preparation for this year is that Thomas Edison was not the person who invented the light bulb. Although Wikipedia said it is, I did a little bit more research. It sounds like over 20 people created a light bulb before Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison created a light bulb which was able to be used by the masses, which was able to be produced, so therefore it's Nikra al Shemo. But so the light bulb was only becoming very popular at the time, again, at the time of Reb Chaim Moser. So the Shaila came to Reb Chaim Moser, how do we treat electricity, electrical light, in Halacha, Shabbos, Yom Tov, Havdalah, Ner Chanukah? How do we treat this? Again, a totally new thing. Something which nowadays perhaps is second nature to us, how we treat it, but that was all established by Reb Chaim Moser in this tshuva. So just again, to discuss 2 minutes of Halacha L'maisa, because we won't be getting so Halacha L'maisa, I just want to more focus on the tshuva of Reb Chaim Moser, specifically how he attacks it. But Halacha L'maisa, we know electricity itself. Without any light, electricity is a big machlokas between the poskim. There are poskim who hold electricity on Shabbos is an iser deraisa. The Chazon Ish holds it is some sort of boina, some sort of makah b'tashis, makah b'patish. You're making something which was not usable, not a kli, into a kli on Shabbos. That's an iser deraisa, boina, makah b'patish. There are many poskim who holds, no, it's not iser deraisa, but it's an iser derabanan. What the iser derabanan is, again, there's what to talk about, but they say it's an iser derabanan. There are those that are even not sure whether it's an iser derabanan. But that's all talking about regular electricity without a light. But kule alma moda, then when it comes to a light, an electrical light, everyone seems to be in agreement that it was an iser of havara. You have a metal filament, which is getting red hot and glowing, so that would be a problem, an iser deraisa of have aura. Again, nowadays we have lights which aren't metal filaments, which aren't glowing, so it might not be a problem of havara. It might not be a problem midaraisa, it might only be a problem derabanan. Again, it has to be, the poskim have to revisit that, and they have revisited it. But again, every kula with Shabbos, if this is not a real light, as far as halacha is concerned, is going to be a chumra with regards to other halachas. Then you won't be able to use it for Ner Shabbos necessarily. You won't be able to use it for Ner Chanukah. So, again, right, exactly. So you have to address it from all areas of halacha. Okay, so Reb Chaim Oizer is discussing electrical light, and again, he's not the first to respond to it, but he's definitely was the biggest name at the time and made a tremendous impact on how he approached this topic of electricity. So let's take a look at the tshuva, where he writes as follows. Adar tafresh talidalad lechacham echa al davar bakashaso levarer behar yarchem shelo odos hanidfasham binogeya electrical lechashmal b'shabbos. So someone who was the editor of a journal came to Reb Chaim Moser and he says, "I want you to write an article about electrical lights on Shabbos. What's the halacha?" He says, "Kvar nisbashto hoyro leiser b'chol tfosis Yisrael." All of Klal Yisrael already has accepted that this is something which is going to be aser. V'chein pasek ha-goyin Reb Yitzchak Shmelkes al b'chibur Beis Yitzchak. The Beis Yitzchak, probably the first meshiv, the first one who wrote a tshuva about electrical lights, he already said it's aser. Tavi av melacha v'chayiv mishum maver u'mechaba. Turning on electrical light, again, an incandescent light we're talking about, is aser midaraisa mishum maver u'mechaba v'ayin Beis Yitzchak, where he develops that idea at great length. Uva shmata sham. This is very important just to understand. This is something which is not relevant to electricity per se, but it's important for people that are involved in Psak Halacha Bizman Hazeh to understand what he's saying. And I don't even want to publish my thoughts about this in the journal. Why? Because once we Right, once we publish a discussion about this, so then it becomes a machlekes. So I say this, someone else responds this, someone else responds this. So then, in the mind of the Habmoin Am, what is this? A machlekes. Ruchai Moses is saying, I don't want people to think that this is a machlekes. This is something, even if you could attack from this halacha concept, this is a halacha concept, that's all nice, with pilpul ba'amel, in the base medrash, you could do that. But at the end of the day, if the all of Klai Yisrael is reading this journal, and they say, okay, I didn't get the details, I didn't get to the end of the article, but I saw there was one person said like this, another person said like this, so he says that's going to lead to a big michshol, people are going to think it's a machlekes, people have to know this is not a machlekes, everyone agrees, this is Elsa Deraisi, so he says, I'm not even going to publish an article about it. That's how simple this is. Asher yisparso adarim b'yukuch hashon v'yuchal liyos l'michshol l'rabim. Skip a line. Avachasta lahadfis ki anochi me'olam misrachik mizem. Always careful not to publish things which could lead to michsha. Lashen es anachlu ka'ez b'makom mayim ha'ra'im. We're at hard times now. Al tamidim yishtu v'yamusu. The tamidim are not going to understand. They're going to drink literally, but he's talking allegorically. V'yamusu ki amei maku yagid lo kol ha'mekov. And he wrote that she is chal shem shemayim, she akilu harbe yoisim yasher nochon apidim. I'm nervous that even writing my tshuva, lahachmir, will allow people to think that there is another tzad. I'm being machmir, but there are those that are mekelim. I'm not writing anything. Umashe sholach elai, ha-takas michtav gadol ha-nitfas be'itar n'yarche beisva l'chachamim in New York. You sent me a letter from a rav in New York, Tofrei Samachim, hadlokas or elektriya be'yomtev shemater, where he allowed, again, this is not so long ago, where there were a banim who allowed people to turn on lights on yomtev. On yomtev, everything's much more mekel. On yomtev, everything more mekel. Again, we assume that it's also because of molid, but there were rabbanim who assumed it wasn't molid. So they said it's mutter. So he said, "What you sent me that there was a rav who mattered, that was only on yomtev. Hani rak biyomtev visvirulei." And he thought, for whatever reason, the ain zeh molid. There's not a problem of molid. Vitziriv zeh lisnif shehu grama. And he says, not only is it not molid, it's only a grama. It's indirect. When you turn on the light, you're not directly lighting the fire. It's indirect. Now we know in halacha, grama already gets a different status. So Reb Chaim Ozer's main intention for the remainder of the tshuva will be to argue that this is not grama. Again, grama doesn't necessarily mean mutter, but any time in halacha we reduce something to a status of grama, where I'm not actively doing it, it's indirectly, so then it's already much more mekel. Perhaps it turns into derabanan, perhaps we can be mekel in other scenarios. Lav dafka will be mutter legamre, that could just go around turning lights, but a grama already is on a much lower level. So Reb Chaim Ozer's intention here is to say, for the remainder of the tshuva, this is not even a grama. And that's the sugi that we have to learn in. Why would this be a grama? And why would this not be a grama? And his goal was, which he accomplished, as we know, the minug, b'chol Yisrael, is not to turn on lights on Yom Tov, not to think about turning on lights on Shabbos, is because we all assume, and there's no makom lahakol because maybe it's a grama, we all assume it's not a grama. And the reason we assume it's not a grama is because this tshuva of Reb Chaim Ozer. So let's learn what the debate was, whether it is a grama or whether it is not a grama. V'snif l'zeh, v'tzirith l'zeh l'snif shehu grama. Avalo ala al das lahakol b'Shabbos, but no one ever thought to be makom on Shabbos, because again, that would, you know, grama b'Shabbos is still aser. V'gam b'din yomtev ein halacha k'mosa. And I don't agree with him on yomtev because I don't think this is a grama. So why would this be a grama or why would this not be a grama?
Why would be a difference between Shabbos and yomtev?
Because on Yom Tov, we're talking about a much lower Isser. Havara itself is not Asr on Yom Tov. The only thing Asr on Yom Tov is that we have an Isser of Molid, of creating a fire. So there's much more reason to say that if I'm not, I myself, that's only Isser Derabam. If I'm not myself doing it, I'm only doing it indirectly, so then we already have a Gram on Isser Derabam, which would be much more make. So let's see why this would be a grama or why this would not be a grama. How do we define? Again, this is going to go well beyond Hilchos Shabbos. This is the main tshuva that defines for us halacha l'maisa. Again, in yeshiva you learn from here till tomorrow about grama this, grama that. But halacha l'maisa, what's considered a grama? What's not considered a grama? This is the tshuva where all the poskim turn to. So let's take a look at the Gemara before we go further in the tshuva of Chaim Ozer. Let's take a look at Gemara at the top of the page. Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin. Omar Rava. Dachva labor, you push, again, nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. Dachva labor, you push a person into a pit. Vesulam babor, but there's a ladder for him to get out of the pit. Uba acher vesilka. Now someone comes while he's still in the pit and takes away the ladder. And even if he himself goes and takes away the ladder, potter, and then the guy dies, let's say, he's potter. Why? Because when I pushed him into the pit, there was a ladder he could have gotten at. So that wasn't a chiv misa. And then when I took out the ladder, so then that was only a grama. I didn't kill him directly. I didn't do anything actively. I just took away, I took out the ladder for him to get away of. So you can't pin it on anything. It says the Gemara, the be'inna deshadi, at the moment he threw him in, yochal alasu. It wasn't a deadly hit because he could still get up. The Amar Rava. Rava goes further. Zarak chet. You throw an arrow. Vitris biyado. And the guy, when you threw the arrow, has a shield in his hand to defend himself from the arrow. Uba acher vinatlu. The person comes and grabs his shield away from him. Vafilu, who called him vinatlu? Even if the same guy who threw the arrow comes and grabs the shield, potter. You're potter. Debeidna deshadibe. Because the moment you threw the arrow, Mifsak PCA Gare. The moment you threw the arrow, there was a shield there that was gonna stop the arrow from hitting him. And therefore, when you threw it, there was something to stop it. When you took it away, that was only a grum. The Amar Rava. Rava goes further. Zarak bochet v'sinmanim b'yadu. You throw a poisonous arrow at him, and the poison is gonna kill him, but he has a remedy for the poison that could save him from the poison. He has it in his hand. Uba achar pizron. But then, before the arrow hits him, someone comes and takes the remedy, takes the potion, and spills it on the floor. Afilu hu kadam pizron, even if he himself does it, potter. All the case you potter, the be'inah de shadabe, at the moment that you did the action, yachal isra'apasava, the person who had defense, the person had a capacity to get out of it. So therefore, whoever does the second action is not chayiv because it's a grama. The person who does the first action is not chayiv because at that point in time, the person still has the capability to defend himself. Amar Rav. Then the Gemara goes on a little bit of a tangent, and the Gemara comes back, which I took out. Amar Rav Papa. New person. It's not Rava. Rav Papa comes and makes a new statement. Hai man de kafse lechavre. A person comes, takes his friend, ties him up right in front of a dam. A dam that's blocking the water. You know, he ties him up right in front of the dam. Then he goes and he removes the dam. Geri didehu u mechayev. So therefore we say it's as if he, Geri didehu, literally it's his arrow. He's the one who killed him. And therefore he is chayev. So the question over here that the Rishonim want to understand is, what is the difference between when I throw an arrow, when an arrow is coming at a person, and someone comes and removes the shield, the arrow comes and kills the guy, so we say he's potter. What's the difference between that case and a case of where I tie a guy up, I remove the dam, the water comes and kills him? That case is chayv. What's the difference? Seemingly, both cases, I'm just removing the thing which will ultimately kill him. In one case, I'm potter. In one case, I'm chayv. What's the reason for the distinction? L'chora, they're the same things. How can you distinguish between? Why is it more direct? Both cases, I'm removing the moineya. Why is one more direct than the other?
Because you're removing the ladder from the pit. You're taking away the ladder, and only then, because that becomes a sakana, you can't get out.
Right.
Dying right away. Here, by removing the barrier, so to say, boom.
And what about the case of the arrow? I remove the shield.
It's also, because the arrow, like with the poison, with the remedy, the antidote, it's indirect. It takes time from the die. So there's a resultant of the action.
Well, you just said an important term. I'm not sure if you meant to say it. It takes time.
It takes time.
Well, that might be a very key factor. Let's take a look at the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah asks this question. One of the main Rishonim, Amaseches Sanhedrin, he gives the answer to the distinction between these two basic cases, and that will define for us what's considered grama and therefore potter, and what's considered grama chayva, and what's considered not grama direct and therefore chayva. Again, both cases, you're removing something which will allow the damage to happen. One case, I remove a shield, the arrow comes and hit the guy and kills him. That case, I'm potter. The other case, I remove the dam, the water comes pouring down. That case, I'm chayv. What's the difference between these two? Seemingly, both of them are indirect. What's the difference between the two, that one's chayv and one's potter? Says the Yad Ramah as follows. After the three dots. V'i kashilcha, michti, hocha lav be'azli mikocha eskinim. Ela kigon, shahaya davar mafsik ben hamayim u beino. You're just removing the dam, which is stopping the water. Vinotlo, and you took away the dam. Vinimtu hamayim ban alav meleim, and the water comes on its own. V'amay mechayev, and why are you chayev? Halav kochahu. I didn't throw the water. Why is it any different than the case of where I removed the shield? V'su ma'ishno midirabo. The Amar Zarak Bochet, Vitris Biyado, and the shield is in his hand. Ubazev and Nolov Afilu who called him Vinolo. Someone comes and removes the shield. Potter, Dibinna de Shada, because at the moment that he threw the arrow, Mifsaksik Egera, there's a shield there. Alma Avogav de Kashoku Leilahu made them to have a Mavsik Bineu Vingeri de Shada a Potter. The Kolchukin Hocha de Hani Giri Lav Mikocho Ozle. Vemai Mechayev, what's the difference between the case of the shield, where I take away the shield, I'm potter, and there, even if I'm the one who threw the arrow, I'm still potter. And the case of the dam, where I'm not making the water come, all I'm taking is taking away the dam, the water comes and kills him, in that case, I'm chayv. Says the Yad Ramah, I think the difference is as follows. Okay, that's a little bit of a different. Let's see the distinction he makes. Vilo damya hamil salizarik bochets vitris biyada. They're not comparable. Why? The ilu hasem kisalke litris. When you take away the shield, mikame denim tigere legabe. The arrow still hasn't reached the victim yet. Who disalke? That's when he takes away the shield. The ilu basit imata legabe tris. Because if the arrow reached the shield already, so then it's not going to kill him. Right? The shield already blocked him. So obviously we're talking about where the arrow's in the air, and I come away to take the shield. Afal gav de kavah misalik le litris. Sulo hava azel geret fe. Obviously, we're talking about a case of where you took away the shield before the arrow came. So the arrow is not touching the shield yet. The shield's in mid-air. I grom and grab away the shield. Hear the key words. When you remove the shield, lav midi of it. You didn't do anything. Mayamar, what are you going to say? Sof chetz lavo, the arrow is going to come soon. Ha amran, we hold. Kol sof horeg lavo. Anytime we say, in the end, someone's going to come and kill. Something's going to come and kill. Potter, that's considered a gram of ba'amahu. Avohocha, but here, the chisalke la'afre de mafsik ben mayil didei. When you take away the dirt, which is separated, when you take away the dam, Maya l'didei Maya have nogi bahu afra. The water is already touching that dam. The distinction he's making is the thing that I'm removing, the thing that's going to kill. Is that ready to come and hit the guy the minute I take away the thing? It's already touching the moneya, the thing which is holding it back, and I take away the moneya, it's automatically going in. Or no, it's still a few feet away. It's still a few miles away. And it's not touching it yet. I take away the thing. It's still good for another 5 seconds. And then 5 seconds later, the arrow comes out of nowhere. So what do we learn from here? The difference between grama, something which is indirect in halacha, and something which is direct, is when I take away that thing. And therefore, when I take away the monet, the thing which is preventing the damage from occurring, is the thing which is going to harm, which the thing is going to cause the damage. Is it already there waiting to do its damage? Or is it not there yet? It's still far away. And therefore, when I take it away, we still have time. That would be considered a grama. That's so chetz lavo. It's eventually going to come, but right here, right now, it's not here. Or is it a case of where, no, it's right here ready. The minute I take away, it's in. So the case of the water, it's already touching the dam. It's ready to kill. The minute I take away the dam, the guy's dead. That's not a grama. But the case of the arrow, so the arrow's up here, I take away the shield, 5 seconds later the arrow comes, that's considered a grum. So what's electricity?
Isn't it fair to remember that you open your front door when there's a ruach matsui, like if you know you open the door, the wind's going to come and blow the thing out. The distinction, if the wind wasn't there, isn't it also the same thing? If you open the door and do
that would fall, that gemara falls, in fact, I didn't quote that part of the tshuva, but if Chaim, I don't know if he himself does that, the post
gemara. That's a clear indication that when you, it's direct, that you open the door, you're removing that barrier because the wind is there. By you opening the front door,
so then you'd be chayav.
The thermostats, when people have problems in the wintertime, they put the thermostats in the living room. By opening the, they say it's still growing because it takes time for the thermostat to
react. Right, exactly. That's all based on this. That's all based on this distinction
exactly
that he clarified.
There's a big machlokus nowadays on that electric switch.
The kosher switch. Okay, if we have time, we'll get to the kosher switch.
Because you also move the barrier.
Step by step, hopefully we'll get to the kosher switch. We'll see. Okay, so again, what are we going to say about electricity? Which case is it comparable to? Is it comparable to removing the dam of the water? Or is it comparable to the case of moving the shield, or is it not comparable to either of them? So, if you do the research on what's going on when I flick a switch, right? So we'll see. Reb Chaim Elitzur says as follows, and I called a few people to see if the facts are still the same in today's electrical system, and it seems that they are pretty much the same. And what's going on when you flick a switch is, again, there's an electric current that's going through it. You have to keep the circuit going. Basically, you have to put a conductor, something which will conduct the electrical current all the way through the light. When you flick a switch off, so it's breaking, you now have taken away the conductor. You've put some material which is not a conductor. Let's say plastic is not a conductor. You've taken away the conductor, and therefore the circuit cannot close. The light goes off. When you flip the switch on, you're putting the conductor, the bronze or the copper, whatever it might be, you're putting it back in place. Therefore, you're closing the circuit, and therefore the light could turn back on. Oh, so Reb Chaim Elitzur says, this is exactly what Reb Chaim Elitzur says. He says, first of all, this is not grama, according to anyone, even without the Yad Ramah, because what's going on over here is exactly what you just said. When you flick a switch, you're putting the conductor in place. You're not simply removing a break in the electrical circuit. You're the one who's putting the copper or the bronze in place to allow it to conduct. So that's not Hasara Samaneya. That's not Grumma where you're taking away the dam. That, according to all deists, you with your hands are coming and fixing the circuit. But he says, I spoke to a few electricians, and they told me that if that's your only argument, we could get around that easily. We could easily make it that the circuit is closed, and the switch is putting a monea there, something to prevent it from closing. And when you flick the switch, all that's doing is taking away the prevention, the monea, and therefore it closes. So we'll have it that the conductor is there all the time, and somehow the switch puts a break in the circuit, and then when you flick the switch, so then the circuit's closed. You're not putting the conductor in. You're just removing a material which is not a conductor. He said that's easy to do. Again, our lights are not made that way. But he said if that's your only problem, we could easily create. And I spoke to an electrician yesterday, and he said the same thing. He didn't know why I was asking. But he said the way it works is that you are putting a conductor in place, but you could easily construct a light switch, which is part of what the kosher switch did, which doesn't put a conductor in place, which just takes away, which just puts a prevention there, and then you're moving the prevention. So let's say that case. You're not putting anything in place. I take prevention away. I put the prevention, the material which is not a conductor, in place. It stops the circuit. I take it away with the flip of a switch, and the circuit closes. So now we come to the Yad Ramah. Well, what do you compare this to? Do you compare this to a shield, where I'm taking away the shield and therefore allowing the circuit to close? Or do you compare this to the Bidka Demayim? I compare it to the dam of the river, and therefore I'm going to be chayev. Says the Reb Chaim Elitzur, to me it's very simple, that the electrical current is here. It's waiting to connect. It's not miles away. It's like the water. It's touching the dam. So in that case, he says, everyone agrees this is not a grama. It's right here, ready to happen. So you see how he takes a concept from the Gemara, from Hilchas Ritzicha, Gemara in Sanhedrin, and he applies it to modern-day application of electricity. He says, therefore, we hold electricity, electrical light, is not even a grama. It's comparable simply to the case of removing a dam. And when you remove the dam, the current's right there waiting to connect with the circuit, close the circuit, and the light goes on. Therefore, he says, it's simple, pashut, according to everyone, that you're chayv. He went so far as to, this was famous, Reb Chaim Elitzur used to make Havdalah, Motzei Shabbos, Bar Mireish, on a light, to teach people that I hold that this is mamish fire. There is no difference on Shabbos between flicking on a switch and lighting a match. So I'm going to make Havdalah Bar Mireish on this light. Now again, nowadays most of our lights are not incandescent anymore. This is something of very recently. Again, these were always fluorescents, but now even most of the lights in regular homes are not incandescent bulbs anymore. There's no filament inside.
So is it hot? What's it from? The heat? Still a circuit.
What determines, according to many poskim, it's not clear what determines it. That's why there has been no clear psak. According to many poskim, what it determines is if there is a piece of metal which is getting red hot. If it's just gas, so then according to many poskim, it's not considered a real fire.
Homes, like people who are in hospitals, they tell people to light, so they say you can make a bracha on the electric.
Only on those, but not on the exactly. It's a bit in hospitals also. It's a big deal, and now a lot of those things also aren't good. But those bulbs are hard to get. The government doesn't, because they're not energy efficient. So it's very they're Yeah, they're doing away with it, which is a problem for people that are in hotels, let's say, and need a light Shabbos candle. Fine. So that's Reb Chaim Moser. If you want to read that's the gist of his tshuva. He comes out, it's not grama, it's an iser d'araisa. Now, just a word about the kosher switch, just to bring it up to date. The kosher switch very much takes the tshuva of Chaim Moser and tries to get around the issues. Meaning, what's the issue according to Reb Chaim Moser? You put a conductor in place. So they get around to that, where you're not putting anything in place. What's the other issue of Chaim Moser? It's not a grumble because the electrical current is ready here. The minute you take it away, it's closing the circuit. They get around that as well. What going on with the kosher switch is that there is electrical eye, that's waiting to make the connection. And at random instances, it will shoot a light and try to make that connection. When you make do the switch, you're doing absolutely nothing. All you're doing is that in a few seconds, when that electrical eye tries to make the connection, will able to be make the connection. So you take Reb Chaim Moser's tshuva, when I do the switch, there's nothing waiting to happen. There's no energy or circuit waiting to close. You still have to wait a few seconds for the electrical eye to connect to the other side. And therefore, the kosher switch, although it might not be mutter on Shabbos, it definitely is better in terms of the fact that even according to Reb Chaim Moser, it would be considered a grumma, and therefore there would be more room to be mekel. Again, grumma on Shabbos is still, which is the rest of Reb Chaim Moser's tshuva, that we still hold grumma on Shabbos as aser. So you still have to get over that hurdle, right? That's what we discussed before. Grandma's. It's not still aser. But there will be more room to be mekel in a case.
Grandma, you finished the act. I'm out of here now. I finished.
So they argue that it's not a grandma. That's for a different shiur. Why? They're trying to say it's not even a grandma because it's not like the arrow's in the air waiting to come. It's not there at all. So they argue like what you're saying. That's.
Well, it could be sometimes when you flick on.
Oh. Did you say you have to decline though?
Finished?
Yeah. Unlock it.
A yantif would be different. But everyone says it's close to a yantif. We seem to say the rabbis, if it was a grum, a yantif would be more.